And I talk from experience. Many clients will say, we'd rather exclude US investors and set up elsewhere. People are saying, well, we're leaving the US and we're going to other jurisdictions. Why? Because they welcome us. We know that there's no risk or little risk down the line that we're going to end up wearing some silver bangles. And I think one of the most unfriendly jurisdictions right now has to be the US, behind China and Korea. Many in the crypto industry will be calling for a recession for the simple reason that it will be a huge boost to the market. You know, and they were saying this 2 years ago. 2018, unfortunately, could be the year. Do I personally feel that is going to happen? I do, unfortunately. Will it be good for cryptos? No doubt it will be very good for cryptos.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I wanted to get back into talking about cryptocurrencies a little bit. And we've talked about whether it's going to be something that's great for society, great for humankind. Is it going to take the power, the centralized power, away from bankers and evildoers and put it in the hands of the people? Or is it going to crystallize their power and turn us into a technocracy nightmare? That's the question that's out there. What's happening now is, instead of the talk being amongst all the futurists, it's starting to happen amongst the business people that are actually implementing this, and the regulators, and all the people are getting on board, especially after the huge upswing in the market in May, June last year. Now the question is, are they going to implement it in ways that are good for human beings, or is it just going to be a racket? And so I bring on Shane Liddell. He's putting on one of the largest cryptocurrency summits in the world, and it's going to take place May 8th through the 11th in Florida. And I have all the information, I have the link here, you can get the information. But I wanted to ask him, he's bringing in experts, regulators, all sorts of people in the industry, futurists to, you know, actual implementers. And I wanted to ask his opinion. And I talk about all the deals, you know, geopolitical things. Can it be used as a financial weapon? Is it going to be technocracy nightmare? Is it going to be freedom bringing? All those things. And we dive into all of that. And then we also get into the practical aspect of it. And what is it really going to mean for businesses? So it's a really good conversation on cryptocurrencies, more of a reality, you know, set here on what's going on. But before I get into that, I want to talk about pet cancer. Cancer in pets, it has absolutely skyrocketed. For dogs, it's over 50%. And for cats, they're not far behind. And my little dog, I'm going to show you a picture here. Her name is Cleopatra. She's like a little princess. She won't go outside if it's too cold. If it's raining, she's like, heck with that. She's kind of like a human being that way. She won't even eat raw, like, meat bones. Most dogs will be so excited about it, their gums will be bleeding. She'd rather have lettuce. I'm not kidding you. And she just doesn't want anything to do with it. She's really, she has all these quirks that make her really fun. But she got cancer, and we had to amputate one of her toes, and you can see it here compared to their other one. And it was really a hard thing for our family. We had to make a decision on, you know, it was expensive, and our poor little dog, and I'm like, okay, let's do it. My husband is less, you know, it's a dog. Why are we paying him? To me, it was, we're doing it. I don't care what you think. And so our little one has one less toe. And so I'm really interested in this pet cancer stuff. And there's a documentary series that's going on soon that will have a free documentary series for a period of 6 days, I believe. And you'll be able to watch a bunch of information on how to keep your dog from getting, and your pets, cats, dogs, from getting cancer. And it's really important. If you love your dog, you love your cat, you should watch this documentary. I wish I had before my little one got cancer. And now, you know, now I'm really on top of it. Cancer's really skyrocketing in our population as well, and it's all related. It just our animal food and what we do with animals are not as regulated as what we do with humans. And so it's happening quicker with them. So watch that documentary. The link is below. And let's get into my interview now with Shane Liddell. Hi, Shane. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Nice to see you.
Well, thanks for joining. I wanted to talk more about cryptocurrencies, and you're putting on a major summit coming up in May with all sorts of people that you're bringing in. And so I wanted to get your take on what's really going on in the crypto market space, not just everybody jumping on the bandwagon to make money, because I'm not interested in, okay, it's another market that people are going to make money on. I want to understand how it's going to fundamentally change society, how governments work, that way. But before we get into that, let's talk about the stock market and how the cryptocurrencies have taken a major hit. Now, is it related to the stock market and being so high? And do you see the cryptocurrencies coming back? Or, I mean, what is the deal with the cryptocurrencies taking such a strong hit?
Well, I think there are many factors influencing pricing. And of course, it's people's emotional, it's their emotions driving. When we saw the price hike up to 19,000 for Bitcoin, I think emotion was driving that very much so. But we've had a dip, a correction, and I always say to people, look, any market will correct based on external factors. External factors being if we have a large seller in the market, there's talk going around that there was $400 million worth of Bitcoin dumped on the market fairly recently. Of course, there's regulatory noise that we're hearing, and all these things affect the price of cryptocurrencies. Crypto themselves, as far as if you look at the total market, we're looking at $5 million more or less raised last year through ICOs. That is small. That's a small number. Yes, we have tweaked the attention of regulators and others, mainstream media in many ways, but that was driven purely by pricing of cryptos going crazy. We've had a correction now. There's a G20 summit taking place later this week. Depending on the outcome there, we will either see a further retraction in the price or things will get better. I noticed this morning, by the way, we have seen cryptos go back into the green, sitting around 10-12% up on a daily basis. So, I think, my take is no market goes up continuously. We have to have these corrections. Are they healthy? Yes, I think they are very healthy. The market itself is maturing to the point of regulators are now taking this industry very seriously. So my personal opinion is, the good times are still to come. I think volatility is the norm and expected until we get some firm regulations. I think that's going to be a very positive thing for the market overall.
Okay. Well, question. Cryptocurrencies have been sold as a way to decentralize the money powers. And, libertarians and people who really wanted to see the central banks take a hit, not have so much power, really liked cryptocurrencies. But as they're growing, like Bitcoin, it's only the people with wealth or a lot of resources that can mine cryptocurrencies and, create and build new money. So do you think that's going to affect, is there going to be a new structure of cryptocurrencies that come out that's easier to mine so that it really can be decentralized? Or is it going to turn into a digital currency that only the wealthy like it is today can control?
No, I think we're in a period of true democracy from the point of view that decentralized is here to stay. Your question about mining, look, it's all dependent on what is the cost of the asset at the time. If you're mining Bitcoin and the value is $3,000 and it's costing you $4,000 to mine, obviously that's not in anyone's interest to do so. I think the problems we're having with mining is really the cost to mine from a power consumption point of view. We are finding that, for example, here in the US, across different states, you have different electricity providers, and of course, it's making it very marginal to mine cryptocurrencies, in particular Bitcoin. This is the way I see things. Green energy pairing up together with crypto mining, of course, everybody's looking at that. I'm speaking to clients on a consulting basis whereby they're investigating, doing a discovery period. For example, setting up solar farms. Florida is a perfect place for that to power Bitcoin mining. But then again, you might produce your costs of mining based on green energy or renewable energy, but the price of Bitcoin has to support your mining operation. So I think there's a lot of nervousness in the market. People are focused very much on the price today, and some are checking the price of Bitcoin on a daily basis. As far as the anarchists, the bank haters, I think I should call them. The crypto industry, I think, has sprung up from a technical field whereby they want to change the system. Change the system from a centralized, controlled point of view to we are the people, we should decide how this particular financial asset works, is regulated, and so on. From a decentralized point of view, there's talk about regulators regulating, but also within the industry, there's talk about the industry self-regulating. And they can do that without human intervention, basically building smart contracts that are self-governing, self-regulating. Of course, we're not going to get to that point yet. But getting back to the crypto mining part of it, I still think this industry is very much made up of those people who came to the party early. They mined Bitcoins at very low value. It's created many multimillionaires, very young guys and girls that are reaping the rewards. I think the rest of the mainstream market, we are now starting to get interest feedback from what I call the majority. I still say this, as an industry, we're still very much in the early adopter stage. That's my opinion. Some might say we're a little bit further on, but look, this is very much grassroots. I became involved in the crowdfunding industry in 2012, and I see so many similarities between that industry and what we are seeing today. There was lots of naysayers. There was, oh, it can't work. We need rules and regulations, of which the SEC did finally roll out rules and regulations for that market. But early days, my predictions, we can all be wrong. Because it's too early. But I think, the train has left the station. It's how it gets to the destination is what we are looking at today. And, like any train, railroad track, there's twists and turns along the way. From a mining point of view, it's here to stay. Whether we'll be mining Bitcoin in 5 years' time or another, I think the market will answer that question as we go forward.
But as it is today, mining is extremely expensive and it takes extensive resources, and it's not just anybody can do it. And it's now becoming more of an industrial thing, and it's different than what people originally sold it as.
Yep, I agree. And yes, of course, commercializing happens in these new markets. You have to play with the big players. But then again, I know people today, as we speak, that have a little setup in their basement, in Norway, for example, where they're mining Ethereum or they're mining Bitcoin, of course, they're not going to become multi-millionaires doing so. Some are making $10 a day by mining, but they're quite content to have that added $300 a month to their income or disposable income.
Just a quick break in the interview to remind you that starting on March 20th, there's a 72-hour viewing window to watch the documentary video series on how to grow 50% of your food in less than 1 hour per day. You will have way more nutritious food, food coming out of the supermarket, traveling 1,500 miles and then to your table, wasn't ripe when it was picked. It can have upwards of 70% less nutrition than the food, the vegetables that you're picking out of your own backyard. Big difference from the nutritional value of your supermarket. You will be so much healthier. Your family will be sick less often. So 72 hours free viewing starting March 20th. And the link is here below and in the video description. So let's get back into the interview now.
Yes, the big commercial players are muscling in. The market changes. When I speak about an anarchist, from an anarchist point of view, down with the banks, down with the system, the time might come where it's down with the commercial miners. We are now bringing another solution.
Well, it's not necessarily anarchists. I think people are worried about the globalists, central banks controlling the world. And that's what they're worried about. And, the unethical trail of behavior that has followed that. And how do we break that down so they don't have so much power? That's what they're worried about. We're not talking about anarchy as much as freedom. But that being said, I've heard that traditional banking from many sources has been mostly an unneeded function as cryptocurrencies come on the market. Do you see banks being nervous about that and needing to get into this space because of that and wanting mining to be expensive?
Well, I think a perfect example has to be feedback from the banking sector. I mean, on the one hand, we've had CEOs of banks criticizing this new technology, saying it's not going to go anywhere. And then they flip-flop a few weeks later or months later to, oh, no, well, actually, we're looking at blockchain and cryptocurrencies as a possible solution for XYZ within the bank. I think banks, to me, my opinion is adopt or die. And, people in the industry have been let down by the banking sector. As we all know, we went through the 2008 recession. People are aware that the banking sector has to take some responsibility for what happened then. Do people trust banks today? Personally, I don't think so. And they're looking for a solution to the problem. I think we have the solution to the problem. Banks are very active in this space in that they are experimenting. They're throwing millions of dollars into projects to understand the technology and how it can benefit their organizations. I mean, at the end of the day, we have legacy systems within the banking sector, and that's across the entire IT spectrum within those kind of legacy companies. And, it's all about you, the consumer. If a bank can provide you service at a reasonable cost, as opposed to competitive offerings in the market, I think that's where they need to go. It's about, let's just rewind a little bit. The banks did not come with this solution to the market. It wasn't driven from the banking sector. Personally, I think they had no need to drive it because it affects their bottom line. Now we have a new industry, new tech that does what? Brings efficiency. It brings security to the transaction process. and accountability. And I think those things maybe are not attractive to banks, you know, until somebody comes with a competitive product and says, well, this is how we do it. You join in or you get left behind. Does that answer your question, Sarah?
Well, I think so. I think banks are nervous, and I think they're looking in a way to how can we end up controlling this ultimately in the long run, because they know it's coming and it's a steam engine rolling down the pike here. But let's get on to technocracy. Many mm-hmm. people are worried that blockchain cryptocurrencies is actually going to usher in a technocracy nightmare, that because of the tax issue, probably that's going to drive it the most, is that governments are not going to allow anonymous transactions without being able to tax. And so ultimately, they're going to make cryptocurrencies register their currency, which will ultimately allow them to track every transaction that occurs so they can tax people. That could usher in technocracy at a level that we've only been nightmares. So what do you think about that? How are they going to deal with the tax issue?
Well, you know, first of all, I think clarity, there needs to be clarity on what the definition is of this new asset class. Now, that's another conversation altogether. And of course, I'm no attorney and you know, that's not really my area of expertise. But, you know, we have the IRS classifying it as a certain type of asset, commodity we are hearing. Security, we are hearing from the SEC. Currency, we are hearing from the CFTC. That is where the big problem is. Now, getting back to accountability is what they want. They want people to be able to trade their currencies, move their currencies around, make profit on their currencies, and pay capital gains tax. That's really what it is. However, from a technical point of view, I think it's problematic in that the regulators, the IRS, I don't believe they understand the technology. And I'm going to bring this up, food for thought for people out there, that there is a term or a new way of peer-to-peer transacting called atomic swaps. Now, atomic swaps mean that you and I can conduct an asset swap, or whether that's a currency or gold or a certificate or what have you. And it works on the basis of this, and it's a very simplified version, of course. Sarah, you want to give me a cryptocurrency, let's call it the Z currency, and I need to give you the Y currency. Now, you take your currency, you put it in a box, and only when I put my currency in the box will the transaction complete. It's a completely decentralized system. And of course, the question comes up, how would regulators, the tax men, and all the other governmental departments, track and trace these kind of transactions? What I believe, and I've said this all along in my time in the industry, is regulators need to be very gentle. Until they understand completely the technical side of the industry, that, you know, you're going to get money floating around, crossing borders and so on and so forth. So before they come down with the sledgehammer and say, this is how the rules and regulations are going to apply, first understand the technology, because you can lay the ground for rules and regulations and taxes, but the technical side of the industry can say, well, we bypass that because we are using the next technology to counteract those regulations.
Well, you know, the NSA put together a paper early 90s that was cryptocurrencies, trying to figure out how to get cryptocurrencies out into the market. And yep. So the IRS might not be all that savvy, and some of the regulators, there are members of the intelligence agencies that are aware, have been planning it for over 25 years now, and are trying to figure out, they want it to be our currency. And being the NSA, which tracks absolutely everything we do, as you know, I can't see them not wanting to track every single transaction as well. I mean, I can't see them not having that as part of their plan.
Sure. But the only real point of being able to track a transaction is when you are transferring funds to a traditional bank or account. Because as you know, we have wallet addresses. We transfer money one wallet address to another. The identity of the owner of that address is anonymous unless, of course, you are holding your cryptos on an exchange or you're transferring that into fiat currency back to the bank.
Well, but you, as you know, if you're required to register to do commerce or you're a criminal, then, you know, that starts to change the equation.
Sure. You know, we've all heard about, I mean, I mentioned, you mentioned the criminal aspect. And of course, we see people out there banging the criminal money laundering drum. You know, I look at it this way. You have to try to understand their motivations in, you know, shouting and screaming money laundering. We have to look at traditional fiat currencies in comparison to the bitcoins and the cryptos.
Oh, hey, I agree 100% with you. I'm not saying they're criminals. I'm saying that's the way the government would categorize them, because legally they would be a criminal if they don't register. Mm-hmm. And now we're suddenly marching in this technocracy nightmare.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, we're sitting on a fence here of something that could be amazing or something that could be an utter nightmare.
Sure. I'm sitting in the amazing camp. You know, we've seen this in the past. If we look just purely at the internet in the mid-90s, the naysayers, the regulators, what was the real problem there? They did not understand the potential of the technology. And of course, many wanted to shut it down, and you're not going to use a credit card to ever buy anything online. Here we are in a new industry, and we are hearing some of the same noise. You know, yes, they want everybody to register, but you have to understand, or this is my opinion, that being a community-driven a technology and industry, I don't think it's the same as anything we've had before, whereby, look, I speak to many attorneys relating to regulations and registering, as you say. You know, we all understand they need to tread very carefully from the point of view is do not force you know, the population to adopt your new regulations and so on and so forth, when the easy solution for them in most cases when it comes to those raising funding using cryptos to go to other jurisdictions and do so. We're seeing a stream of, I'm very much involved in the consultation side of fundraising within the crypto industry. And I talk from experience, many clients will say, we'd rather exclude U.S. investors and set up elsewhere.
Why? Why would they rather exclude U.S. investors?
Because they're more friendly to what their business objective is. For example, they have very loose regulation.
So is this? Who are the ones that are resisting U.S. investors? Is it governments or just businesses that are trying to get set up? Banks?
Small business that are looking to is capital issue tokens rather than go through the expense. In some cases, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars to be fully compliant, even though the term fully compliant, I don't think it sticks because we don't have specific.
It's all BS. We don't have compliance in the crypto space anyways. Anyways, keep going.
Exactly. So, you know, but they exclude U.S. investors. They exclude the U.S. market. What happens in that case? And I'm seeing it all the time. People are saying, well, we're leaving the U.S. and we're going to other jurisdictions. Why? Because they welcome us. We know that there's no risk or little risk down the line that we're going to end up wearing some silver bangles. And it's more tax friendly. I mean, we have some jurisdictions today that are offering zero tax rate for the next 5 years if you set up there as a crypto blockchain business.
So now what countries are better than the United States? Almost everybody?
Well, that's subjective to what your objectives are as a business. But I'll say this. I think one of the most unfriendly jurisdictions right now has to be the U.S., behind China and Korea.
Why?
South Korea, I should say. Well, because South Korea and China have a ban on raising funds using an ICO, a coin offering or token generation event. The United States has more or less said, well, we have an existing regulation, rules and regulations set for equity crowdfunding. Abide by those rules. To abide by some of those rules can cost you upwards of $300,000 in compliance costs from a legal point of view.
I see. So is that their way to protect banks is that the lobbying of banks, do you think?
It could be. You know, I'm not really into the politics, to be quite honest. Who's lobbying who? The banks are scared. That's my opinion. I think they're running scared. They've spent huge sums of money to catch up with the technology side of things, putting teams on projects and so on. But at the end of the day, let me simplify things for your listeners or viewers. If we take a very simple transaction, I want to send you money via PayPal, for example. The normal process is I'll send you the money. You're a small business. You'll receive that $100. Let's use that hypothetically. And then there's around about a 3.5% charge for receiving that funding, right? Today, we are transferring money around with fees, and it's very quick. At a cost of, in some cases, 0.9%. That's your total transaction cost for sending the funding. Now, if you look at a bank or you look at a PayPal and you look at this new technology and the efficiencies that we provide, I think if we were bank, we were in a bank, Sarah, we'd be running scared. We'd be, because it's our bottom line that is threatened, that now no longer can we get away with charging these 3.5%. We have to somehow reduce our cost to the customer to be more competitive.
Well, we have no reason to place our digital currency at a bank anymore because it's digital and it can just be stored on our computer or wherever. The cost is very small as long as it's secure. And banks don't have any kind of monopoly on that. But let me ask you, you know, some countries such as China, there's this theory out there that some countries such as China want countries to take on this cryptocurrency decentralized stuff so that the country itself doesn't have control over issuing its own money, which destabilizes the country. And you can then influence the country, and like China could destabilize the country even more and play games, because having centralized control of your money is a stabilizing factor for a country. Mm-hmm. And so there's an idea out there that, you know, having cryptocurrencies is a financial weapon.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of theories going around. I mean, for example, China, people believe there was a ban on ICOs in China or cryptos purely because they want to develop their own currency. Now, sovereign currencies, by the way, there's many conversations taking place today with countries, for example, I'll give you an idea, down in South America, the Caribbean islands, where they're looking to adopt a specific currency for their country, a sovereign currency. Now, China, I think more from fear initially, I think it was a knee-jerk reaction. I think they have a history of knee-jerk reactions to threatening technology as they put the brakes on it. But I believe, you know, China's not alone. Some see it as a threat to the point that, well, if we put a hold on that until we truly understand it, at the same time we can be developing our own country currency. But yes, there's, you know, it's a subject that I believe, you know, there's lots of confusion here. Governments are still confused, and they will be for some time until they fully understand the implications. Look, I mentioned or touched on this earlier. You come down with a sledgehammer effect like China did, I will say this. That does not mean Chinese people are not investing in ICOs or trading on exchanges and
Yeah,
so
they're
on.
one of the busiest, right? There's some of the most activities still happening in China.
If we look at Japan, Japan has become really active because of China's ban. Lots of exchanges have moved across to Japan. Japan, on the other hand, is a very friendly jurisdiction. They are very pro cryptocurrency and always have been. In fact, they're very much involved in promoting the retail merchant aspect of crypto technology. And, you know, I read an article late last year that this summer, I think it is this summer, they're rolling out 160,000 retailers that will accept crypto as payment. If we look at China and we look at Japan, I think that's two extremes. On the one hand, shut it down. On the other, embrace it, adapt. They understand the benefits going forward. There are many Japans in the world. For example, I'll give you an example. There's a little island called Mauritius. Consensus, a company, is very much involved there, the Ethereum Alliance. They want to build it as a crypto island. Now, many people possibly haven't even heard of Mauritius. But, you know, it's these smaller guys, I think, that are very flexible, of smaller jurisdictions, very flexible to change their rules, regulations quickly if needed. But they're looking at that to maybe have a competitive advantage over the United States, for example. I mean, look, in the US, we've seen a lot of subpoenas going out to people involved in the crypto industry that have run fundraising offers and so on. They're firing a lot of warning shots, I think. Yes, they're bad actors in the industry, just like they are in any. I saw many in the beginning of the early crowdfunding days. And to put things in perspective, in the early crowdfunding days, we had platforms Kickstarter and Indiegogo. We had roughly 50 campaigns going live a week. Today we have 400 or 500. So, you know, but in those early days, people, the bad actors, saw that as an opportunity to do what? To scam, to take money and run away, because a lot of these platforms were very much in their infancy. They didn't have systems in place that they have today to protect those that were backing these campaigns. You know, I had a conversation last week with an attorney that's 40 years experienced Wall Street securities attorney, and I understand his concerns, but this is how I responded to him. You know, he wants regulation and he wants all these good things. But I said to him, you know, when did we all really start to hear about cryptos? And it was June, July last year. Why was it June, July last year? Because all of a sudden we saw a huge spike in the number of ICOs that were raising huge sums of money. The money attracted the media and it attracted everybody else. So my response to that guy was, they didn't build Rome in a day. How can you expect regulations and everything else when in reality this market has sprung up since June, July last year? We're 7 months since then, 7, 8 months. We can't expect miracles. It's going to take time. We have to flush out these bad actors. The industry itself, by the way, I believe, is as concerned about the bad actors as the regulators are. We don't want them in the industry. They shouldn't be in the industry, but it takes time for a market to flush out these people.
Well, nobody wants crooks, right? Nobody wants those people because unless you are one. You know, let's move on to the companies directly issuing their own coins. Many believe that will ultimately be a way to replace stocks. And companies issuing their own coins could ultimately clean up Wall Street maybe eventually. And that could be a huge benefit.
Well, we had a similar or similar conversations back in the equity crowdfunding days, whereby conversations were saying Wall Street will be disrupted to the point that there will be no Wall Street. Have we moved further along that path? Yes. Cryptocurrencies have come about, different ways of trading stocks, security tokens, and so on. But I like to distinguish between a security token and an equity token, because a security token doesn't necessarily mean that you or you have a share of that company or you have a voting right or so on. What it really means is you're taking your token sale through the security regulation process. From an issuer's point of view, there's no dilution if you don't want dilution. In other words, it has utility for the purchaser of the token to access a platform, for example, but they do not have any say when it comes to management and so on and so forth. Will we get to the point where all tokens that are issued are a security? I think the SEC and regulators would love that to happen. But, you know, we have conversations taking place that even some attorneys do not agree that every token is or cryptocurrency is a security. Yes, we are going to have right now we have a lot of startups raising capital for blockchain projects using tokens. However, once it's or and it is moving to the mid-sized company, the corporations, I think the use of an equity token, as I mentioned earlier, I think will become far more common. And in that process, I think Wall Street has to adopt or die. I say this about the banking sector too.
I think we're on a fence here, and they have about 5 years where they're going to figure out where they're going to go.
Yes. And, you know, they have to look at we always say this, problem and solution. I think that particular sector of the market has to identify the problem and find a solution. Otherwise, you become extinct. I think that's life. That applies to many things in life.
Well, let's talk about Wall Street. I mean, everybody says there's a huge bubble right now. It's held up by Federal Reserve printing, and that a reset is inevitable. Do you see cryptocurrencies taking over once that becomes, you know, closer to a reality?
Well, I think if we have a correction, it's beneficial for other industries. Look, if we have the stock markets here in the US correct 30%, 50%, I think you're going to see a lot more traction within the crypto industry. Why do I say that?
Is that the tipping point? When our U.S. markets eventually correct, that will be the tipping point for cryptocurrencies to take over?
You know, I think this particular industry, and I relate to the crowdfunding industry yet again, crowdfunding really took off during hard times, recessionary times, because people needed another avenue to access capital. When we had a correction in that market, the crowdfunding industry more or less exploded. 2018 recession, people are calling for a recession in 2018. There's many factors involved from a financial point of view. As you know, the housing market is really and has been racing ahead for some time. But to answer your question, I think many in the crypto industry will be calling for a recession for the simple reason that it will be a huge boost to the market. It's an alternate financing
system. That's not a good reason, but go ahead.
What's not a good reason?
I don't like the reason of creating a correction in the market. I don't like the reason saying I want my market to go up, so I want that one to take a dive. But that's the reality of business. It is what it is. Go ahead.
Exactly. And, you know, I prefer to bring the reality. Yes, we all wouldn't like a recession because it's disastrous. But You know, there's so many signals right now. I'm not a financial guy. I speak to a lot of people.
We should have had a recession years ago, but keep going. It's been artificially propped up by the Fed.
Exactly. And, you know, you can only do that for so long. I call it kicking the can. You kick the can down the road. Eventually, you can't kick it any further. And I think we're getting close to the point of the any further. But, you know, I rely on people that are in financial industries that have opinions. And I look at the signals and some are saying, you know, and they were saying this 2 years ago, 2018, unfortunately, could be the year. Do I personally feel that is going to happen? I do, unfortunately. Q3 later this year. But that's a prediction. I don't have a crystal ball. Some will counter that argument, I'm sure, and say, well, no, it can't possibly happen. Will it be good for cryptos? No doubt it will be very good for cryptos.
Well, people talk about another major benefit are the smart contracts or also just the blockchain technology dealing with fraud in contracts. You know, I interviewed somebody, a company in Africa that are doing smart contracts with blockchain, actually on ledgers. They're cleaning up the land grabs that are happening in Africa through blockchain technology. And there's a lot of that in all sectors where they can clean up fraud. And many believe that the cryptocurrencies is actually, big picture, is actually more of a minimal, you know, compared to what the fraud reduction can be in other sectors using just blockchain and other types of technologies.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Africa, I spent quite a number of years in Africa. And yes, you know, there's a lot of corruption there, like there are in other places in the world. You know, this technology, blockchain, is a disruptor for sure. And, you know, many people say, well, disrupting is a word that in some cases can have negative connotations. I think disrupting some of the things you touched on just now, Sarah, is that we can disrupt markets. Africa is a prime example of huge potential that will benefit the people there. We know Africa is primarily, there's lots of poverty and people are earning little money and struggling to survive. But I also know that we have governments there that siphoning the money off the top, left, right, and center there. They have people vote them in, and once they're in, they don't really care about their population.
They're not any different than our market, our government. I'm sorry. Our government's siphoning significant money, which there's been studies showing that we have at least over $21 trillion missing just from HUD and the Department of Defense. Professor Skidmore and Catherine Austin Fitz have been running that study, and it's like solid proof, slam dunk, they nailed it. They know it's missing. We're just a wealthier country, so we're able to absorb that without our people feeling it. In Africa, you can't steal because the people are already suffering.
Yep. You're 100% correct there. You know, there is corruption in first world countries, but there is a lot in Africa. I mean, I'll give you an example. I was stopped speeding there. And I was offered to pay my fine on the spot, so to speak. It's either that, it's either you pay $200 now or you pay $600 and we'll go through the process. But anyway, that's
you're right. That's like that in Mexico. It's like that in a lot of other countries. Although I got a ticket and I went to complain about it and they did some underhanded dealing with me as well. That doesn't go on the record. And if you pay this now, we won't. I pay more in order to make it so that it goes away so it won't affect my insurance. I did not like that because that's essentially what they were doing here. They were just doing it in a way that didn't look as bad. Same thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so anyway, now we've come to the conclusion it happens everywhere.
Yes, it does, unfortunately. So, talk about your conference a little bit. You have speakers from all the different sectors dealing with blockchain and crypto cryptocurrencies. Can you explain it a little bit, when it's going to happen and how they can get tickets?
Okay, we are running an event in Tampa, Florida on May 10th, 11th at the Tampa Convention Center. We are bringing speakers. One thing I want to bring up from the very beginning about our event, we've taken a different approach in that we are aiming to be a diverse event. In October, when we came up with the plan for our Crypto Economy Summit, we looked at the market, and I've attended many industry events too, and I saw underrepresentation for especially amongst women and those of color. Now, we set off with that objective in mind to bring quality speakers, of course. Content is king, but at the same time to have numbers that reflect how we see the industry. And to try to accommodate those that generally, in some cases, would not get the opportunity to share their experience and their knowledge. So we set out, for example, screening a lot of speakers with those objectives in mind. It was a lot of hard work to get the numbers of females that we have speaking at our event. We did not sacrifice content and quality, let me say that. We had to go through more or less 200 applications to get the speakers we have today, and we have many on the waiting list in case somebody can't make the dates or so on. What I believe, and leveraging from my experience in the crowdfunding industry, I attended a lot of events in that industry too. I was more focused on speaking to attendees as to get their feeling as to how they felt about a particular event. And in most cases, I got this kind of feedback. It was nothing but a pitch show. All we had here were people selling their wares and pitching this service and pitching that service. And all I felt like at the end of the 2 days was people were trying to sell me from the moment I arrived till the moment I left after the networking event on the last day. Now, that was repeated several times in my experience of going to other events. Now, I saw the new industry coming to, mainstream media and said, look, what were the problems we've had in the crowdfunding industry? One of the biggest problems we had was a lack of traction within equity crowdfunding. And I'm going to quickly rewind to 2016. In the back end of 2016, there was a telephone survey done to 500 small, medium-sized companies, and they asked them this question: are you aware that you can use equity crowdfunding to raise capital for your business? Now, there was 500 participants in the survey. I'll ask you, Sarah, how many do you think out of 500 were aware that, oh, I can use equity crowdfunding to raise capital?
10%. I don't know.
Six.
Oh, really?
Right. Now, this is 2016. The very first Jobs Act rules, regulations, were for what we call Reg D, 506C, in 2013. A phone call was made, a survey was done 3 years later, and we had six out of 500 companies. There we had a problem. The reason I came up with a crypto, or we came up with a crypto economy summit, was why we do not want the same thing happening in this industry. I think the best way for a market to mature and to get mass adoption is to educate them. What was lacking within crowdfunding? The education part. People were focused on making money. Oh, let's raise millions and let's do this and let's do the project. Everybody forgot, or education was on the back burner. I took the decision to put it on the front burner, so to speak. You educate the people. When we do a telephone survey here of 500 people, I want at least 50 to 100 of them to say, yes, we know we can use blockchain and crypto technology to raise funding or to better our business, make it more efficient, or what
But
have you.
nobody wants to go to a bizarre environment where everybody's trying to pitch stuff to you as you're walking around. They want to go and listen to inspiring speakers who get them thinking out of the box and get them understanding something from different perspectives. Otherwise, it's a waste of their time.
And one of the biggest problems we have, I think, is we have a lot of technology But we have a gap between the technology and business process application. For example, we need people to educate businesses that, yes, you've heard of the tech, but you haven't quite heard of the benefits to your business process. And I think there's a huge opportunity in this market for those consulting and advisors to approach or to bring a corporate America to the table or mid-size America from a business point of view to the table and say, hey, are you aware of cryptos? Yes, we heard it on the news. We heard Bitcoin went crazy. Do you understand how that can have a positive or such a positive an effect on your business as it is today? These are the kind of things we want to teach. We're going to be focusing a lot on business application too. Of course, the legal side as well. As I mentioned, we have speakers coming from all over the world. It's a global technology. I think, you know, we talk about distributed technology. Well, I talk about distributed speakers. I think we have them all over the place. We're going to bring them into a centralized environment. I couldn't help but put this part in to teach those that can take away a lot and on the Monday morning of the following week be able to identify processes and efficiencies within their own business and start to move into the investigation discovery stage.
So, okay, what's your website that they can go to and get information?
It's cryptoeconomysummit.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Shane, for sharing this with us today. It was a good conversation.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.